Hey, Anton.
Yeah, Margaret?
You know what people don't talk about enough?
What?
Simon's keychain. Welcome to People Don't Talk About Young Royals. I'm Margaret. My pronouns are they, them.
And I'm Anton. My pronouns are he, they.
And we're people here to discuss the show our friends are sick of hearing us talk about.
Margaret, what are we talking about today?
Today we will be having a general discussion of Season 1, Episode 1, opening up the conversation to miscellaneous motifs, symbolism, and themes.
Woohoo! In this discussion, we won't be summarizing the plot of the episode, because we already did that. If you need or want a refresher, head back 12 episodes in our feed to our most recent This Week at Hilarishka for a full breakdown. This episode discussion will likely be all over the place, so strap in. You have been warned.
So, the keychain. I said it in the cold open, so we're going to talk about it now. See it when Simon is opening his locker, and it is a middle finger.
Mm-hmm.
It's just...
Yeah. I did not notice it until I had to, like, write it down for the summary episode.
Like, for the This Week in Hilarishka?
Yeah, for This Week in Hilarishka, yeah.
It's quick.
Yeah, because it's so... It's quick, it is subtle... But, like, my God, this is so good.
And I think it really sums up his attitude about being at Hilarishka.
Oh, yeah. Like, because you got to remember, it's not just, like, he doesn't have a car, so it's not, like, a keychain.
Yeah.
A keychain for a car. It's a keychain for
his
locker
at Hilarishka that he is.
He flips off his locker at Hilarishka every single time he opens it.
He gets his, like, English book or Swedish book or whatever, math book, and he's just like, hey, fuck you, Hilarishka. Yeah. And I think that's beautiful.
Yeah. Which again, to reiterate, because, again, something I didn't catch the first time around, is, like, I guess, okay, it does depend on which subtitles you're using, but... It is possible that, like, Simon has talked about dropping out.
Yeah.
Or at least, like, he doesn't love it here. And that's just fair. That's just so obvious.
Yeah,
I'm just stating the obvious. But, like, no. But, I mean, this is meant to be kind of a quickfire episode of just, like, little things and little details we wanted to appreciate and wanted to shout out that we couldn't in other episodes. But yeah, no, that was good.
I don't have a ton to say about it farther than that. I just think, it's a keychain. It's small. We only see it for a couple of seconds. Sums up his experience, his attitude towards the school very perfectly.
Yeah, I'm forgetting what the term for this is. I learned it in one course of my college English career, but I know there's a thing in literary criticism called about symbols and how, like, symbols cannot mean only one thing because otherwise they're an allegory. And so, like, the idea is that, like, symbols cannot mean only one thing, and they always can mean more things. Is that symbols always mean, like, more than what they are on the page, because that's what makes them symbols.
Right.
And so it's, like, it's representative of Simon's rebellion towards the school, towards, like, just, like, it has a very specific vibe, but I think you can take it in a lot of different ways.
And if you disagree with the way that we're taking it, tell us what you think about any of these symbols.
Yeah. Yes.
But,
I mean, yes. Don't we mean be respectful in our DMs? But, like, I don't know. I think a middle finger is fairly straightforward, but, like,
yeah,
you know, at least if you are in a culture that uses the middle finger in the way that we understand the middle finger to be used.
Yes.
Which, for those, if you're from a culture that is not that, basically it's one of the most offensive signs you can give to someone.
It's like saying fuck you, but with your finger.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. I think it's very important to highlight that as just a symbol. I know just kind of going through this episode, there's not tons of symbols to shout out.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. What do you want to talk about next?
I know that you wanted to talk about the royal family posing for a portrait for Simon, Simon, for Wilhelm.
Kind of loosely going in chronological order. So this episode does go in some sort of follow, like, order that listeners will be able to follow. I think we mentioned Art of the Frame briefly, but I think the fact that when the royal family is sitting on that couch, when Wilhelm is giving his speech, they really do look like they're posing for a portrait a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. And like the fact that they are in front of a painting, which if you want to hear more about that painting and you haven't heard the previous episode,
listen to
my very long tangent about guessing who could be in that painting and what that could potentially mean for the history of the royal family within the universe of the show. No, yeah. Like, I think it's to me, it evokes the tradition of the royal family, mm-hmm. in the idea that they are an institution that has continued on and is like we talked about last episode, like they are a relic of history. They are a relic of the past. And you can kind of see that by a historical painting behind them and them basically posing for like, looking like they're almost like posing for a new painting.
Yeah.
In the front, like, just like it's very, the expressions all kind of match. Like, it's all kind of the same vibe. It's like they are a institution that is as unchanging as they can possibly be to kind of represent the like past of Sweden and strengthen a sense of like continuity from past to present.
I just thought of this now, also be kind of reminiscent of only seeing a snapshot of these people's lives?
I think that's also fair. Royal portraits were always also very staged. Mm-hmm. Famously, I believe it was Marie Antoinette was very famous for communicating with the royal public through portraiture. There's one instance I know of where she had a baby. She had her child who was an infant put in one of a portrait, and then that child died in infancy, and so the portrait was repainted so that the cradle was empty. Oof. It is at least very well established in a lot of royal families. I would imagine in the Swedish royal family too, where it's like symbols do mean a whole lot. Mm-hmm. And like Eric says in this episode, it's important to keep up appearances. Yeah. And so like, well, it's like a snapshot in these people's lives, but ultimately like it is a staged photo. Mm-hmm. Like everything about it is just like, I think I before in the past I've like compared them to dolls, but like it's just like you are there's some frames where like you basically are the artist who is like had them all placed in a certain way and in certain arrangement, and like they just like know their place, mm-hmm. and like know how to sit, except for Wilhelm.
Yeah. And we've talked about
He's like the only movement on screen. And so it's like, it breaks that symbol. It breaks like the like exactness of that symbol, but like in and of itself, like that means something.
Right.
In the sense that like this continuity of past and of past to present is not totally seamless.
Right. I want to talk about the frog print snow globe.
There is one thing I have before chronologically.
Yeah.
It's super tiny, we mentioned it in Eric's character episode, but Eric literally throws the school rules at Wilhelm. Yeah. Like, it's kind of a small thing and also kind of an obvious thing, but I think acknowledging the very deep symbolism of him handing him something, like, I think it says, like, etiquette and something
we talk about it in at the very least the summary episode.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think later, I believe we talked about it in like The Love Among Royals that includes
mm-hmm.
the part of The Love Among Royals that uses includes Wilhelm and Eric's relationship.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Where I think I was a little bit more specific. We were a little bit more specific of what's on there. But regardless, like alongside the verbal advice he is giving him, he's literally giving him like he's like literally handing down the tradition of this school of which he is an alumni. Mm-hmm. And being like, this is how you do things.
Yeah. He's handing down the code of conduct.
In more ways than one. Yeah. He's like, this is how I got through, so this is how you can get through.
Yeah.
Which I just wanted to quick highlight that.
Yeah, no, of course.
Now let's talk about the snow globe.
Now let's talk about the snow globe. I love this snow globe. Mostly because of the symbolism, partly because I love snow globes. Fun fact.
If you didn't catch what we're talking about, and if you're more like, okay, if you have been deep in the Young Royals fandom for a while, you'll know what snow globe we're talking about.
Yes.
But if you are a real one who just watched the episode literally for this podcast, more power to you. Thank you. And also you're welcome, you know. But
thank us later.
if you're that, we're talking about, it's a very quick flash either before or after Wilhelm is in bed at Hellerska, like looking at his phone and like texting his mom. We find out that he owns a little frog prince snow globe.
Yes.
A little frog with a crown with golden flakes, yes. golden snow yes. in it.
So he has this snow globe and it's on his desk and it's it's a frog with the crown. So it's a frog prince snow globe. The nature of a snow globe is it's mm-hmm. completely, it's covered in glass and it can't get out of that bubble. It's forced,
Yeah.
There's water in it. And so it's watertight. And I think this isn't coming out well, but the symbolism for me is how constricting and unnatural the prince role is for Wilhelm.
Yeah. Don't mind me. I'm literally looking up the Brothers Grimm Frog Prince story.
Are you good? What just happened?
I might cut this because it's so irrelevant. In the original Grimm version of the story, the frog spell was broken when the princess threw the frog against the wall, at which he transformed back into a prince. It
killed the frog. Holy shit.
And so it's not Shlomo's kiss or anything. It's Lizzie threw him against a wall. In other early versions, it was sufficient for the frog to spend the night on the princess's pillow.
How fairy tales evolve is so bonkers to me. Because they are all grim as fuck.
Oh my god, this is even sadder. The frog prince also had a loyal servant named Henry, or Harry, who had three iron bands affixed around his heart to prevent it from breaking in his sadness when his master got under a spell. When the frog prince reverts to his human form, Henry's overwhelming happiness causes all three bonds to break, freeing his heart from its bonds.
Oh my god.
I will say, that's homoerotic as hell.
It's homoerotic and kinky. You got any more on your little frog?
It doesn't really say in... I mean, it doesn't say how he got turned into a frog. It's honestly one of my least favorite things about fairy tales is they give no backstory past when it starts. Other than, like, it was a witch.
Witches be running rampant in fairy tales.
Yeah. No, but, like, I think it is interesting to think of if we want to say that, like, this snow globe represents Villa, like, what does it mean that he is a frog prince?
What do you think it means?
I think it means, it could mean that, like, the whole thing of a frog prince is that he is under a spell and he's in an unnatural state.
Yeah. I was going to say stuck somewhere he doesn't fit into or isn't supposed to be.
Yeah. And what I think is interesting, I'm kind of thinking of the Princess of the Frog right now. I don't know. It's very profound in my head. I don't know if it'll come out that way. But
that's okay, say it and I'll tell you.
The Prince and the Frog Prince story is traditionally about how the unnatural state of being a frog prince, the unnatural part of being a frog prince is the frog part. But what if the unnatural part of being a frog prince for Villa is the prince part?
I just fully agree. Yeah.
Yeah. Which, like, is kind of the plot of Princess and the Frog, although not exactly, because they're still royalty by the end. But, like, I don't know. The idea that, like, regardless, if Villa, it all identifies with the frog prince, that, like, he is still a prince, but feels as though he's, like, wrong for the job. Or, like, doesn't really fit. And it, along with everything you were saying of being, like, trapped behind glass.
It means so much.
No, and yeah,
we see,
like,
it more. We see it. We'll see her again.
Yeah, it was just a little flash here, but, like, we wanted to really front load the symbolism so that people who haven't seen the show before, when it does pop up again, you're like, wait a second. People don't talk about
that. God,
talk
can you imagine
that.
Somebody watching the show and being like, they talked about that. That's crazy. Okay.
Is it a stretch to call out the third year sunglasses as symbols?
No, and I think we should.
What do you think they're symbols of? Because I just kind of threw that out there because it felt symbolic and I just couldn't put my finger on it.
You know Mean Girls on Wednesday we wear pink?
Every day we wear sunglasses.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's like, it feels like part, the fact that three, they all have the same sunglasses, feels like it's like
no literally.
Part of their friend group's like uniform.
Yeah,
like also, like, I mean, there's this whole, also, like, the whole thing of, like, whenever you, like, they're like dark enough sunglasses that, like, they, like, when August puts them on, like, you can't see his eyes anymore.
Nah.
And so you're just like, he becomes less relatable in that moment of where you're just like, you're, I don't know what else to say about that, but it's just like, those sunglasses feel significant and I wanted to call them out.
I hate those sunglasses. Just because they're so extra.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
They're so extra.
I mean, does seem to be kind of bright out. In their defense.
No. Okay, it's not the sunglasses I hate. It's the way August puts them on and
He's trying so hard.
He says, I'm going to be a douche.
Yeah.
And I'm going to lean into it.
Like, I'm going to make sure you know I'm cool.
Yeah. Also, props to Malta for making that, like, not cringe. You know what I mean?
Because the thing is, August buys in. And Malta buys into August buying in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Again, I don't know if this is a stretch, but it feels symbolic to me.
Uh-huh.
I wrote down Mika tidying up for Simon, and then Simon joining in on the tidying up.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of that?
I agree. Yeah. I think it is, God, the mood of our episodes always just
I know.
Plummets as soon as Mika is in our notes.
It's getting better because I, like, am prepared for it, but, like...
Yeah. Those first few episodes when it happened, it was just like...
Boom. Energy went down to zero.
No, literally. I would agree. I think him tidying up and Simon also tidying up. We've talked about the parentification of Simon. Mm-hmm. And I think that that shows up. I think we see it.
It's like Micah starts tidying up for Simon, and then Simon starts tidying up for himself. It's like.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's not a.
But like, is it for himself or is it for Micah? Yeah.
Like, is he helping him hide his mess?
Yeah.
Which that right there, that's feels so symbolic. It feels so symbolic.
It's very symbolic. It's also troublesome.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Like, it's not your responsibility to clean your parents' mess.
No.
I wanted to put that out there for any young listeners who might feel like it's their responsibility to deal with their parents' BS.
It is not.
It is not. Okay.
I don't have anything else to say about that. I think we should move on.
No, I definitely think we should. I felt so galaxy brain when I came up with this next one.
Yeah, I want you to talk about this.
The masks during Villa's initiation.
Mm-hmm.
I never really thought about the fact that, like, everyone is concealing their identity. Mm-hmm. So we never know who is who in this.
Yeah.
Which, like, on the one hand, you could just say, like, oh, that just adds to, like, the scare factor or, like, the creep factor or whatever. And it does.
Right.
It undoubtedly does.
Yes.
But I do think it's very important to acknowledge what masks can do. I mean, case in point, like, the, like, decade of discourse that we all know of, like, when you're anonymous on the internet, you do and say some wild and shitty things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everyone's concealing their identity, but because they don't have to make direct eye contact with Villa and have Villa, like, see their face, it lowers their inhibition so that he can't call them out for anything.
Right.
Like, he can't know who does what to him.
Right.
And so he can't, which means he cannot bring the weight of the royal family against them if he
wanted to. I was just about to say, the entire, like, rest of the episode, they're like, you know, being nice to him, getting with the royal family. This is the one time where, like, they don't feel the need to do that because he has no idea who they are.
Yeah, they don't have to save face because he can't see their face.
Because they don't have a face to save.
And a little thing, I don't know if this will come up in later episodes, but a little thing to know about me is I love Oscar Wilde. If you are not a native English speaker and you don't know who Oscar Wilde is, read The Importance of Being Earnest. It is one of the best plays ever written, in my opinion. But, I mean, this doesn't come from that, I don't believe. I believe this actually comes from a fairy tale that Oscar Wilde wrote.
And we're back to fairy tales.
Yeah. Where Oscar Wilde is well known for saying, "Man is least himself when he talks in his own person. Give him a mask and he will tell you the truth."
Whew.
So, like, there is a sense that how the children of nobility and, like, the children of the richest people in Sweden
mm-hmm.
would act towards the prince if they could be completely anonymous.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't have consequences.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is what I meant last episode when I said, like, the queen thinks that state school is a bad influence. And then you get the initiation where the second there are no cameras around and no one has any, there's no chance that anyone is going to catch them on it. It's some of the most reprehensible shit I've ever seen.
Yeah.
That isn't. I don't exactly know the whole laws on hazing in Sweden, but, like, it doesn't. Nothing is ever fully illegal, to my knowledge. But, like, it's so fucked up.
It's very fucked up. I mean, it's physical assault.
But, like, when they can, like, when they have this opportunity to make sure Wilhelm doesn't know who they are and can't identify their identities with their actions, they demean him and use this as a chance to see royalty brought low.
Yeah. I mean, they literally walk him on a leash like a dog.
Yeah. That image was specifically what I was thinking of when I was thinking about demeaning him. Like, literally, like, treating the prince as a dog.
Yeah.
And, like, if August is to be believed, everyone had to go through this. But no one could really convince me that they didn't take a particular pleasure in it when it was the prince.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
And then, I don't know if you, like, have thought of this before, but, like, the actual initiation itself with Nils, Vincent, August, and Villa, like, in the palace.
Mm-hmm.
That I've always kind of wondered what the whole thing is with, like, the way they're positioned. And this time I finally kind of worded it as, like, it's both an embrace and an inescapable trap.
Yeah.
Because it's, like, on the one hand, like, Nils and August, and, like, it's almost like, it's, like, it's, it looks like a group hug on the outside. Mm-hmm. And then you realize after it's over that they, like, let Wilhelm go, and, like, he, like, stumbles back. And you kind of get the sense that, like, they were kind of holding him in place.
And if you stumble, yeah, no, go ahead.
No, and at the same time, it's like they're like August and Wilhelm's foreheads are touching. Like, it's a very, it feels like a very, like, touching, like, loving mm-hmm. thing. And then Wilhelm stumbles back from it, where it's just like, how free were you in this? Like, I don't know.
Yeah. If somebody lets go of you and you stumble back, that means you were pulling away from them.
Yeah.
Like, he was trying to escape, but he couldn't.
Or he was like, they weren't really paying attention to, like, the positioning of his feet, so he was kind of unsteady or something like that. Regardless, like, it's like, they were definitely, like, holding him.
They were holding him there. Yeah.
Can we talk about Simon's glow stick? Of a halo?
Yes.
See, it feels like such literal symbolism, but I, like, there feels like there's more there, because it's like, it's pretty clearly a halo, so you're like, oh, okay, Simon's an angelic being, but I'm like, that's a bit too simplistic for young royals. So, yeah. Like,
it's also a little glow stick crown.
Yeah. It could also be a crown. But if we'd also go with the halo thing, I don't love this framing because it does make Simon less of his own person. But it also could potentially be true just from, if you frame it from Wilhelm's perspective, guardian angel.
Ooh. I can see that.
Or like saving grace.
Yeah.
Or it's like,
I think saving grace still allows him to be his own person.
No, yeah. So like it's, he's there, like, I mean, in so many ways, Simon is a breath of fresh air to Wilhelm in this environment.
Oh, absolutely.
And then also, if it's a crown, then you have kind of Simon kind of asserting himself as, like, just as equal to the prince.
Mm-hmm.
And almost like he is the one, and like, Wilhelm has like a glow stick of a similar size, but it's like around his neck, as though it's like fallen. Mm-hmm. And you're like, so you're like, Simon is the two of them who seems comfortable wearing this glow stick like a crown, because Simon's whole thing is that he. I believe that he kind of wants to be noticed. Like, he doesn't like being ignored or invalidated because of his class status or his ethnicity or etc. Like,
yeah,
he wants to step into his own power in a way that Wilhelm, who has had to deal with the consequences of his own power, is like almost fully like running away from. Internally.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a fair assessment.
Yeah. Should we get to the actual, like, purple and orange of purple and orange?
Yeah, probably.
We actually skipped the initial orange.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Again, this might take some explanation, and, like, unfortunately, neither of us are actually full experts in this theory, so we are open to being educated on, like, people who are more deeply invested and like understand this theory of the of color in Young Royals to DM us about it. But as far as we can understand, orange and like red, like warm colors like that, are strongly associated largely with like Wilhelm, but also just like generally like the feeling of like romantic or sexual like attraction between Simone and Wilhelm. Case in point, no matter how you want to take it, the fact on the table is that when Wilhelm sees Simon for the first time, he is wearing an orange cardigan.
Yep.
But orange, though, I feel like is less of a clear-cut symbol than purple.
Yeah.
Because purple is, like I said, I said symbols mean a lot of different things, but the closest to a symbol that is kind of straightforward once, like, you have the creators kind of explaining what they intended by it, like, you kind of see what it means in basically every scene where it appears on Simon's clothing, in his costuming. Because Simon doesn't wear purple at all in the episode until the party scene, where we have again mentioned multiple times that like that is the moment where like Simon starts considering like, do I want to kiss this boy?
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is that basically purple has for generations been a royal color. Fun fact, it's because the dye to make things purple was the most expensive. And so it was basically the richest fabric you could own, or like the most expensive. Simon wearing purple is basically meant to represent his level of attachment to Wilhelm. So in this case, he's wearing a dark purple shirt that is not, with all the lighting, it's like hard to see that it is purple, but I'm fairly certain it is. But he's wearing that under like a tan jacket. And so there's the idea of like he's concealing his feelings more, or like they're just budding in him.
Yeah.
So they haven't like fully reached outside, or like he's like not, or like because he is uncertain of Wilhelm's sexuality or how he might feel back, like he's holding back a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And he may not even be sure about his feelings 100%.
Yeah. Like, it isn't until like the last like few minutes of the episode.
Yeah.
That he's like, maybe I do. Like, would it be so crazy if I kissed the Prince of Sweden?
Yeah. Imagine that being your life.
Yeah. And then, I mean, we're kind of coming down to the end of the episode, but like, the fact that Wilhelm remembers Simon Solo.
Mm-hmm.
Almost, like, most of the words to, like, the chorus. Yeah.
Even drunk.
Is, like, he's held that memory with him.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, there's also, we haven't really fully addressed what that conversation is.
Yeah.
Between them. Of Simon asking what Wilhelm thought of his singing, and saying that that it was good because, unlike everyone else, he was singing straight from his heart.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically in that sense, like, it takes not even just the words of the song, but just like the performance itself for Wilhelm represents Simon's boldness.
Mm-hmm.
And like his like blunt honesty. When he is surrounded by liars and performers.
Yes.
Not to be too shady about everyone else, Alershka, but like, we've talked
about... No, I think we can be shady.
Yeah, we've talked about how Henry and Walter, like Lillian, like we've talked about so many times about how Henry and Walter just like changed their opinion based on Wilhelm's. So it's like, what do you actually think, guys? Like, we don't know.
No, literally.
We don't know.
Oh God. And the world may never know.
Okay, and then the final symbol that I think I could come up with was, to me, it kind of relates to like the general symbolism that is very well known in the global queer community at this point, of like, of the closet, of coming out of the closet is revealing your sexuality to other people. And in recent memory, I actually can't think of a character who is more in the closet than Wilhelm. Because yeah. he is in the closet to himself. Almost certainly. But then, which to me, when you make the closet literal, or like you extrapolate it to like a narrative symbol, it means that like characters revealing themselves like physically to other people, being found, or being seen in like usually like in some sort of compromising position, like that represents something bigger at that point. Where it's like part of myself that maybe I didn't even know about is being forcibly revealed to another person.
Yeah.
And by that I mean like August hunting for Wilhelm when he is actually like with Simon. I mean, there's so much to like August thinking he might be with Felice, but he's actually with Simon. And then Nil suggesting that maybe he's making out with someone.
And that look and when when they hear that.
Yeah. But like the symbolism of like Wilhelm wanting to remain hidden just feels very closely associated with the fact that like he is not out. And so he literally wants to stay hidden because some part of him like... He says, like, I don't want to talk to him right now, is his excuse to Simon. But, like, he feels more terrified than just, like, I don't want to talk to him right now. Like,
yeah.
On some level, he is scared of August now. And I think he has reason to be.
Yeah, me too. August said he could kill somebody and get away with it.
And, like... I don't know if Wilhelm doesn't really realize, I don't think, until like maybe, and this is a stretch, honestly, maybe like the last moments of the episode, that he might have something to hide. But some level of him knew that he like, which to be fair, all you have to do is like see that like August called pulling Wilhelm away from Simon, rescuing him from that situation earlier. Like, and also he just heard August that same night, like, call Simon the enemy.
Yeah.
And so, like, taking sexuality out of it, he knows that August might not react well to
100%
finding him with Simon.
Yeah.
And so... I think he might have just consciously lied about saying that, like, it's because I don't want to talk to him right now.
Yeah, I would agree with you.
Like, that feels like a very rushed lie and not a great one, but, like, it does the job.
But he's also never told a good lie in the entire episode.
Yeah, that's fair. But somehow people still believe his bad lies. Because they want to.
And because they don't know him.
Yeah.
It's easy to believe lies when you don't know the truth.
One of the most fascinating parts of the whole show to me, it's kind of a broader statement that doesn't really relate to this episode specifically, but like the moments when you actually do see Wilhelm from other people's perspective, and like weirdly, he feels like a different person.
Yeah.
Because around other people, he is a different person. Like he's bad at it and he's uncomfortable with it, but like he learned something in press training.
He had to.
Yeah.
He was there long enough.
He still carries himself like a prince.
Yeah.
He may not like it, but he can talk like a prince.
Yeah.
Like, he's very respectful with Simon. Like, we've talked about, like, the little cutenesses of the episode, like, where he does get flustered, but, like, he is trying his best to, like, behave like a prince would in, like, meeting somebody. Like, I don't believe we met. I'm Wilhelm, which actually, to be fair, he also doesn't drop his title, which is very unprincely. So it's like,
yeah, that's more like a normal kid.
Yeah, like where does his comfort level lie?
with Simon.
Yeah. Well, of course, we ended a symbolism episode on top by talking about Willman.
Yeah, we always do.
Yep.
Every time.
All roads lead to Willman.
Even when it's literally not an episode about them.
Yep.
Okay. We closing her out?
Yeah.
Thank you for listening. If you'd like to keep up to date with when we release new episodes and other pod-related announcements, you can check out our Instagram at People Don't Talk About. Our next episode will start a new cycle of this podcast, analyzing and discussing Season 1, Episode 2. We'll begin with a This Week of Hilarishka, summarizing the events of the episode, so stay tuned. And with that, all that's left to say is,
let's start a revolution, baby!